Namo in the forest who desires to climb a hill full of thorns and small stones. As stated in the previous verse, the happiness derived from society, friendship and love is like a drop of water in the scorching heat of the desert. One may want to become very great and powerful in society, but this is like attempting to climb a hill full of thorns. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur compares one's family to high mountains. Becoming happy in your association is like a hungry man endeavouring to climb a mountain full of thorns. Almost 99.9% of the population is unhappy in family life. Despite all the attempts being made to satisfy the family members. In Western countries, due to the dissatisfaction of the family members, there is actually no family life. There are many cases of divorce, and out of dissatisfaction, the children leave the protection of their parents. Especially in this age of Kali, family life is being reduced. Everyone is becoming self-centered because that is the law of nature. Even if one has sufficient money to maintain a family, the situation is such that no one is happy in family life. Consequently, according to the Vanashram Institution, one has to retire from family life in middle age. Panchashodvam Vanam Rajet. One should voluntarily retire from family one should voluntarily retire from family life at the age of 50 and go to Vrindavan or a forest. This is recommended by Srila Kumara Maharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, Text 5. Tatsadu manye suravari vihinam sadasamul vigna dhiyam asadgraha hidvatma patam vihamandu tupam palangato yad dharma svayeta. There is no benefit in transferring from one forest to another. One must go to the Vrindavan forest and take shelter of Govinda. That will make one happy. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness is therefore constructing a Krishna Balaram temple to invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere. That will help one become elevated to the transcendental world and return home back to Godhead. Another sentence in this verse is very significant. Kotumbika krudyati vajanaya. When one's mind is disturbed in so many ways, he satisfies himself by becoming angry with his poor wife and children. The wife and children are naturally dependent on the father, but the father, being unable to maintain the family properly, becomes mentally distressed and therefore chastises the family members unnecessarily. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.2.9, Achchina dhara dhavina yasyanti dhirika nam. Being disgusted with family life, one separates from the family life by divorce or some other means. If one has to separate, why not separate willingly? Systematic separation is better than forced separation. Forced separation cannot make anyone happy, but by mutual consent or by the Vedic arrangement, one must separate from his family affairs at a certain age and fully depend on Krishna. This makes one's life successful. So Bhagavatam is describing the householder. The natural progression of life means that one usually follows a particular trajectory. We start off as children, but at a certain age we go to school. And so this is the Brahmacharya ashram. And ideally one is trained in all the principles of human life, civilized life, and ideally also the basic principles of spiritual existence or spiritual life. Then after Brahmacharya, there's the Grihastha ashram, the householder ashram, which most individuals will enter into. And if the training in the formative years of our childhood and early youth is strongly focused on human life and the purpose, understanding the purpose of human life, that is to realize one's spiritual identity, then the householder ashram will be a place of spiritual shelter for the candidate or for the devotee. But of course, here we have a description of this. This description is for the materialistic individuals, and then, of course, after, and according to the laws that govern the duration of life in the Kali Yuga, then one will live for 100 years. Just like Prince Philip just left his body.
One year short.
99. Not bad. Not a bad innings. Huh? 99 years. So, and if we divide that up into four, 25, 25, 20, then so we have 25 years for student, 25 years for household life, but then at 50, it's recommended that one turn one's focus from the external efforts, activities, generally focused in occupation and family maintenance. At the age of 50, and Prabhupada quotes here, pancha sodvam vanam vrajet. After 50, one should go to the forest. Right? Pancha sodvam vanam vrajet. And Prabhupada says the ideal forest to go to is Vrindavan. Right? We are building a Krishna Balaram Mandir, Krishna Balaram temple. So that, what does he say here? To invite its members as well as outsiders to come and live peacefully in a spiritual atmosphere. That will help one become elevated to the transcendental world. So the point here is that if one becomes too absorbed, or all one pursues are the development of the family, of family life, which means working hard to maintain the family, working hard to buy a house, maintain the children, maintain one's wife. This is likened here to climbing a big mountain. Right? This is the description. But climbing the mountain without mountain climbing boots. Right? With insufficient shoes. And this mountain is littered with sharp stones and rocks. Right? This is a description, metaphorical description of what it's like to pursue happiness in household life. It's like climbing big mountains with insufficient footwear, and the road is scattered with sharp rocks and thorns. Right? Anybody here have experience of this? Please raise your hands. Yeah. Hard work.
Once I was going up the slipping all the time.
Slipping, yeah, slipping. But you kept your eye on the top, right? The goal. And persevered.
But I had some companions to help me. So
yeah.
I did.
You made it to the top. Right. And then when you do get to the top, your wife tells you that there's something that you forgot, that you left behind. Or the kids want something more. Right? So even when you get to the top, you're not happy. Right? Work hard to satisfy the family. And what are the thanks that you get? You try to discipline your children and they tell you that you don't really love them. Right? You don't love me. You just want to boss me around. So it's interesting here. What's the end result of family life? You work hard and you become hungry. But because of insufficient, because of not putting in enough effort, at least to the satisfaction of the other family members, you always remain hungry and aggrieved. Right? And then, what does that lead to?
Frustration.
Yes, frustration. And what does frustration give rise to?
Lamentation.
Anger. Yeah, lamentation comes after anger. And you become very angry with your children because you tell them to do something and they say, shove off. My father was used to get very angry, especially with me. But I realised later on, years later, that it was his, out of frustration, out of affection. He used to get angry because he grew up wearing grey gabardine suits. But I wanted to wear jeans and grow my hair long. And he did everything. Actually, my father did everything that my grandfather told him to do. And my father always said, I always did what my father told me to do. And I thought, that's ridiculous. Who does what their father tells them to do? I certainly didn't. But later on, in the later years, I was talking to my dad, and he told me how he became a teacher, and it was because his father told him this is what you should do. And then I realised maybe he did do what his father told him to do. Maybe that's normal. My dad would be very angry, super angry, and would hit us even. It wasn't particularly violent, but he had a trick. Because he was a school headmaster, he knew how to dish out the punishment. But he used to stick his knuckle out and then he'd hit me right there. Because I wouldn't listen to him. I deserved it. I realised, and I also knew how to agitate him so that I could get a rise out of my father. But he felt as if he was expending all of his energy to satisfy his family and to look after the family. He's working very hard. Very hard. But then look what happened. His son became a Navarpa. And so he was unhappy, frustrated, angry. I mean, not all the time. I shouldn't paint. I had a good relationship with my father, actually. It was just a few rocky years when I was 15, between 15 and 35. I can relate to this verse in the Bhagavatam because I saw that my father, my brothers were good boys, they were good boys and they did what they were told. And of course later on my father, when he really learned what I was doing at the temple and what was happening here, then my father started to appreciate a lot more what I had chosen in life. And he also appreciated why I was such a rebel. Because, I wasn't interested in pursuing the regular, goals of materialistic people. And that was a bit of a shock. It was a shock was a shock for everybody when somebody gives up their material pursuits and takes to a life of spiritual discipline and spiritual practice and eschew, you know, they give up accumulating money, buying a house, having a family, and that's like a shock. Ooh, what are you going to do to be happy? That's what happens when young men come to Krishna consciousness, then and girls as well. Then their families freak out. Their families become alarmed. Oh no! My mum said to me when I told her I was living in the temple. Oh no! You sound like a parrot already. You know, she's thinking I was brainwashed. I said, Mum, I haven't said anything yet. I just said hello. I said, what was going on in her head? You and Hare Krishna have got my son. Oh, gosh, what does that mean? Because my mum said later, I was embarrassed because my son became a Hare Krishna. But then I was embarrassed because I didn't know why I was embarrassed. Why should I be embarrassed? Especially when my parents discovered what I was doing as a president, and they visited the temple and got to understand what was motivating me to do the things that I was doing, and they learned to appreciate it. They learned to value a higher, having a higher goal in life, that is to pursue one's Krishna consciousness, pursue one's spiritual advancement, which will give us ultimate satisfaction. You know, the satisfaction of family life fast fades away. Even if your kids are good and obedient, they'll still disappoint you. They'll still disappoint you. This is how material life is designed. They won't do exactly what you tell them to do. I don't know whether you've experienced it. Do you have experienced that yet?
Every day.
Yeah. Kids will take a hike, Dad. What do you know? Or they'll never live up to your expectations. Never be able. It's impossible, actually. So the Bhagavatam is warning us that fully absorbing ourselves in these pursuits that are basically materially motivated, this is the point, material motivation won't bring happiness or satisfaction. It'll bring a lot of effort, a lot of endeavour, and one can't ever be really fully satisfied on the material platform. And so, therefore, what's being alluded to here, and what Prabhupada mentions so often in his teachings is, we should have a Vana Ashram society, Vana Ashram community, if you like. And that we're aware of the fact that, we have student life where we're trained to act according to our natural propensities, and we should be trained accordingly. And then the next 25 years of our lives will basically be focused on family life. But not to make that the be-all and end-all of everything. It's certainly important. We have to do it. And, basically you can't stop people from doing it. You can't stop them from being engaged. It's natural. And so it's encouraged, it's supported. But if it's just purely to try to enjoy, enjoy family life and the family and work and so forth, then along with that comes a lot of frustration, a lot of anxiety, And so by the time you're 50, 55, 60, you'll have high blood pressure, you'll have all the ailments of old age, pretty much. And so at that point in time, then one should relax. And hopefully, or usually by design, the pursuit of material happiness, one has deep realizations about the faultiness of material existence. And this is the real benefit of Vedic culture, in one sense, is that it encourages us to, you know, be dutiful, right, to do your duty, but at the same time be detached from the result, right? And understand that the real purpose of human life is to come to the spiritual platform. And the benefit of you know, in other traditions, one has to give up everything, become a sannyasi, in order to be successful in one's spiritual life. But in the Gaudiya Vaishnava, or in the Vaishnava tradition, that's not necessary, actually. Even as a householder, one can make progress. Gradually, one can make progress if one has that, the focus also on one's spiritual cultivation, one's spiritual development. Right? As Prabhupada mentions here, 99.9% of those pursuing happiness in family life are unhappy. 99.9, Prabhupada. So point one of a percent of people who are happy in family life. Huh? Who is it? We should be half a person, because we've got about 50 people here. Or less. So, you know, this is just, it's a warning to remind us of what our purpose is. And here Prabhupada says, punch a sword bum, banam project, get to 50. Go to the forest. Now, I made the mistake, I've told this story many times before, but I made the mistake of telling my mum about this. So when I turned 50, mum said, well, what are you going to do now then? What are you going to do now? But of course, in one sense, householder, brahmachari, sannyasi, vanaprastha, if one has focus one's life on spiritual practice, right, then one doesn't need to go to the forest, actually. If one's already engaged 100% in serving Krishna, if one's offering the efforts of all of their activities, which means including looking after the family, then those activities in Krishna consciousness, even if it's in the householder ashram, actually it's not required that one has to give these things up if already spiritual life has been added into the equation, right? Because the spiritual practice is already there, right? So we see that the householder ashram can be a great source of anxiety and suffering and distress. Right? Some exhilaration, some excitement, definitely. So we think, you know, by all of the running around and all of the effort that we put in and all of the adventure that we're enjoying. But here we're reminded, actually, it's like climbing a big mountain without any shoes. Lots of pain. Prabhupada often quotes Vidyapati, right? Vidyapati. The happiness one derives from family life is like a thirsty man in the desert, being given a drop of water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A drop of water. Yeah, we see the mirage, we think, oh, look, there's the water, but we go running to it, and what is it? It's gone. It keeps on going ahead. But a devotee's not like that. The devotees are, yes, we have our duty, and we need to go through. The Varnashram system is for our purification. And ultimately, it's for the pleasure of Krishna. It's performed, and it then leads to a peaceful environment where one can, if he's situated properly in the correct ashram and in the correct varna or occupation, then one's life will be relatively peaceful. Right? Will be settled. And so then we can add the Krishna consciousness program. And really that's what Prabhupada gave us, is the opportunity, basically add Krishna, add sadhana bhakti, add the 64 items of devotional service as recommended by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we add Krishna to our lives. Some are able to completely absorb themselves in devotional service, and in ISKCON that pretty much means preaching, book distribution, harinam, prasadam distribution. These are our preaching, and even for the householder community, just setting an example of stability, of care and affection for the family. You know, it's not like we, you know, oh, your family members are just like, well, it's described in the, what is it, in the Bhagavatam, like jackals and thieves. And Prabhupada tells us, he says how your family members can come and take money from you when you don't protest. But if somebody else did that, you'd, hey, thief! You call the police, right? But your family members come along and plunder your money, and you're happy. Huh? And for a devotee, it's not like that at all. We have to be careful. A devotee, a Vaishnava, or an aspiring Vaishnava, we may not be Paramahamsas, but an a sadhaka, is rendering service to the family, protecting the family, protecting the wife, or in the case of the wife, protecting the husband and the children, so that they become devotees. And so then the underlying purpose is not family happiness on the material platform, which comes and goes, right? Matras, Parasaras, Kunte, it has a beginning, a middle, what is it? Adyanta Vanta Kunteya Na Te Shu Ramate Buddha. We don't seek pleasure in our material pursuits. And Krishna warns us in the Bhagavad Gita that it'll be up and down, up and down, up and down. That's why one has to tolerate it, tiksha. One has to tolerate the ups and downs. And remain steady. And we're steady in our Krishna conscious pursuit, our sadhana, effectively. So in the early morning, a devotee rises and then pursues his spiritual practice. And that's the main, you know, that's the main purpose of existence, is to realize our spirit. It's the gift of the human form of life. You know, the eating, sleeping, mating and defending. We share that with the animals. In fact, the animals, many of them do it better than we do. Right? But in the human form of life, we kind of get the, you know, we get maximum animal benefit. But we get something that the animals don't have and don't get. And that's the ability to realize one's spiritual identity. To even understand it, to appreciate it. Huh? Your dog will pay great attention to you if you show them affection, right? Sit. The dog will sit. And then you can talk to the dog and the dog will enjoy you talking. But you won't understand a word of what you're saying. Right? You're not the body, you're a spirit soul. He behaves like a dog. Right? But a human being shouldn't behave like dogs in the human form of life. We shouldn't behave like we have. And so therefore, the satisfaction of those of the basic needs, eating, sleeping, sense gratification, defending, they're kept at a minimum in Vedic culture. Because the understanding is, okay, let me focus on my spiritual life. And there's a concession, in one sense, there is a concession given for the household life because it is a bit of a distraction. But at the age of 50 or, you know, thereabouts, the children are grown up, the responsibilities have lessened, then we're encouraged to concentrate then on spiritual life. And that's the... That's really the, you know, who's going to go and live in a forest in this day and age? Which forest will you choose to live in?
Vrindavan.
Vrindavan. Go to Vrindavan and try it. Huh? Are you going to go and live in Vrindavan? Vrindavan is like a polluted city. Huh? It's covered. This is the trick of... In the Kali Yuga, the dharm gets covered. You know, when you go on Vrindavan Parikrama, talk about what is it? Small stone fragments and thorns. It used to be you could walk around Vrindavan. At least half of the Parikrama path was the silver sands of Raman Rishi. It was beautiful. Although you had to watch out for the dogs. I remember walking out where the... and this dog came up to me. And they started growling at me. I thought, whoa. It was peacefully chanting Hare Krishna. And this dog came along and he's going to attack me. And I didn't have a stick. You know, many of the devotees in Vrindavan, they walk, when they go on Parikrama, they carry a stick with them. Because you never know what's going to happen. Monkeys, right? Steal your glasses. And the dogs will bite. And, you know, rabies, who knows what. Oof. Dangerous place, actually, when you think about it. But now it's all concrete and reinforced concrete. And, you know, you walk around Vrindavan with no shoes on. Oof. By the time you get back to Krishna Balaram, your feet are destroyed. But anyway, this is this punch of sword vandanam brajet means give up material pursuits and now take to spiritual life. And we're very fortunate in the Krishna consciousness movement. We're very fortunate, especially in a community like ours, in that we have an opportunity to pursue, to absorb ourselves in our spiritual practice. We're able to engage in our occupational duties. Generally speaking, we can be relatively wealthy, both materially and, more importantly, spiritually. We have a community where we're surrounded by like-minded people for whom spiritual practice is the most important endeavour. We have a temple where we can come and associate with devotees, where we can enjoy kirtan, where we can enjoy darshan of Radha Balabha, Gaudiya Chandan Balaram Subhadra. And we are a preaching community in that our focus is, well, set a good example for others, but then preach, distribute books, Gaan Hari Naam, chant Hare Krishna, wake, basically we're here, well, wake ourselves up, but then wake up others. This is the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it's how we worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, one of the devotees told me recently, when I was in Adelaide actually, one of the devotees was telling me how members of other mats tell them, don't join ISKCON. They'll get you to go and sell books. As if selling books is a mundane activity. And it's easy to see it as a mundane activity because there's a, you know, there's apparent business transaction going on. But it's not. We're giving transcendental knowledge. This is a brahminical, purely spiritual activity. We shouldn't see it as, just selling books, I'll turn you into a book distributor. But actually, that's what Prabhupada did. Right? When you think about it, that's what he was doing. When he went to America, what did he take with him?
Books.
Books, yeah, books. He had some muesli, right? some grains. Prabhupada said, I didn't know what I was going to eat in New York. Didn't know what they would have when I got there. So he took some cereal with him. But what was the most important thing that Prabhupada took was his books, the Bhagavatam. Huh? So these activities, Harinam, Sankirtan, this is what Lord Chaitanya did. Huh? Lord Chaitanya was Udilo Aruna Pura Babage Dvijamani Gora Amani Jage. Lord Chaitanya, at the rising Aruna of the red in the sky, right? Lord Chaitanya went out on Sankirtan and he's calling out, Jeev Jago, wake up, sleeping souls. See, when we go out on Harinam, when we do book distribution, if we do prasadam distribution, it's to wake up the sleeping souls of Kali Yuga. So, you know, we are, or we should be, a preaching community. And for the householder community, it means that in some cases, don't preach. Sometimes preaching is not preaching, in that you just set a good example. Right? Practice what you preach, and people be struck by that. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions that what's night for the conditioned souls is a time of awakening for the transcendentalists. So the devotees rise early in the morning to pursue their spiritual practice, their spiritual life. And the materialists, what are they doing? Sleeping away. It's darkness. Darkness, darkness. But the devotees want to wake people up. We've been woken up to the purpose of life. And so our business is to wake up others. Well, stay awake ourselves. Right? Stay awake. And then with that transcendental vision, then give it to others. That's our spiritual practice. Right? Interesting. You know, for others, go to the Himalayas and perform yogic austerities. Right? Or perform sacrifices and yajñas. But for us, the yajña is Sankirtan yajña. Right? Krishna Trisham, is it? What's that verse?
Is that here?
Trisha Krishnam, yes. Krishna himself has appeared, but not blackish Krishna, the golden avatar, Vishvambhara, the maintainer of the whole universe. That's Lord Chaitanya's name, Vishvambhara. He's the maintainer of the whole universe. And he's made spiritual practice, book distribution, Harinam and Prasadam distribution. So, what? And we see it. I just signed the heads HOA for the new lease for Crossways in the city. And the devotees, is Priya here? Priya was asking me the other day, she knows the Crossways, she said, can I stay at the temple and look after reception? I said, no, they're going to want you to go to Crossways because you're a hard worker. And some of the devotees think, oh no, I'm working so hard, this is not spiritual life, this is just material life. Right? But even spiritual life is hard work sometimes. You know, we think spiritual life, oh yeah, it's going to be really easy. But even spiritual life is hard. If you want something that's really valuable, right, then you have to be prepared to pay the price, to put it, you know, to get something as valuable and as worthwhile and as difficult to achieve as it is, it requires some effort. But we think, it should be just like, everything should be just easy. Huh? But what, in any of your experience, what is there in life that's worth, you know, actually worth pursuing, and you can just get it easily? Anybody have an experience of something valuable just drop into your lap? Pretty rare. Pretty rare. Right? I used to think when I was 16, just walk down the street and then one day there'd be a beam of light come out of the sky and I'd become self-realized. Well, have a guess what? It never happened. Never happened. Until I met the devotees. Until I met the devotees. And then, you know, that's when life started to make sense and life got easier. But it still was a struggle. It still was an effort. Because, you know, nothing comes easy. So,
except inheritance.
Inheritance. but it wasn't that. That's the hard work of our parents. But they had to work hard. Yeah. And that's it. You know, you work hard and then your kids spend all your money. Right? Something to look forward to. Work hard and then they enjoy it all. I'm scratching my head, what am I doing this for? Well, but we're doing it to make spiritual advancement. And, you know, it's a sacrifice. It's a sacrifice to rise early, to chant 16 rounds, to follow the principles, and to give, and to get a balance. It's a balance because we also have our needs. We need to be fed. We need to have clothes. We need, you know, we've got to balance that. And then balance the material pursuits, if you like, with our spiritual practice. And in order to perfect our spiritual practice, we need to also do some preaching, because that's the yuga dharma. The sadhana is to maintain and support our going out and giving Krishna to others. Now that requires effort, but the interesting thing is, if you put in that effort, then Krishna reciprocates. If you surrender to me, I'll reward you. Right? So when we put ourselves out to serve Krishna, and especially if we put ourselves out to distribute Krishna consciousness to others, book distribution, harinam, prasadam distribution, then Krishna reciprocates. He reveals himself. What is it? Desam satati yuktanam bhajatam priti bhuvatam. The dhami buddhi yogam tam. I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So Krishna reciprocates. You see it when the devotees are out on Harinam, or when you go out on Harinam and you're chanting Hare Krishna, there's a point in the kirtan when you're no longer in Bourke Street. Right? You look like you're in Bourke Street, but you're not in Bourke Street. You're in Vaikuntha. Huh? And you see it. The devotees are all smiling and they're happy. They're not in a material world anymore. And then you see all around the people that are witnessing the Harinam, they're also not in Bourke Street anymore. They're in Vaikuntha. They're smiling, they're clapping, they're dancing. You see it very often with children because they're uninhibited, you know. They're not thinking about what people will think about them. Right, and the Harinam parties go down the street and the kids are dancing. And the parents are looking at the child and they're going, whoa, look at that. And the devotees, they're seeing the child dancing too. They're going, hey, whoa. Because it's a natural, you know, what is it? In the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma says, when he describes the spiritual world, that every step is a dance. Right? And every word is a song. And so that natural enthusiasm comes out in the Sankirtan. That existence in the spiritual realm. And because it is the sacred yuga dharma, it uncovers, you know, this preaching activities actually uncovers one's spiritual identity. Krishna reciprocates with those devotees who put themselves out to bring others. And of course that can be done in a variety of, in many ways. And so that then makes our material pursuits, if you like, our family life, whatever, spiritualized, right? The so-called material activities that we perform to keep body and soul together, to educate our children, to pay the mortgage, to pay the rent, or, you know, the so-called material pursuits. When we engage in those purely spiritual activities And those material activities, so-called, are supporting our spiritual efforts, especially our preaching. Then even those material activities become spiritualized. Because they're done, you know, just to maintain the basics. But the real purpose is to make spiritual advancement. And making spiritual advancement means giving Krishna to others. This is what the Sankirtan movement is all about. It's about making spiritual advancement for ourselves. But that process means helping others. That's real advancement in spiritual life. Not just thinking about my own liberation, but being concerned, yes, about our own liberation, but being fixed up as sadhakas, as preachers, and giving Krishna to others. Either by setting an example, that's one way of doing it, but following in the footsteps of our founder Acharya, Prabhupada took his books, translated the books, printed the books, sold the books, or distributed the books for the purpose of giving others an opportunity to wake up and make progress. So, you know, for those devotees who are engaged in household life and are preaching, there's no need to go to the forest. There's no need. The balance is already there. Example of going to the forest means renouncing material life and taking up spiritual practice. This is what it means, going to the forest. Why do we go to Vrindavan? Why do we go to Vrindavan? Anybody here been to Vrindavan? Why did you go to Vrindavan? Have fun? We go there because it's Krishna, it's Gokul. And we go there for kirtan, for shravanam kirtanam, right? Hearing and chanting. That's what we go to Vrindavan for. And even then, we have fun. Right? Very blissful kirtans in Vrindavan in front of Gaunitai and Krishna Balaram. And Radhishan, yeah. Very ecstatic. But then we go to Vrindavan to get spiritually surcharged so that we can come back to Melbourne and preach. Give it to others. We go there, fill up, become a resident of Vaikuntha, a resident of Vrindavan, and then we bring it back here and share it with others. That's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada could have just stayed in Vrindavan. He was already there. He was already perfect. He didn't need to come to the West. But why did he do that? Because that was the mission of his spiritual master. And of course the mission of the previous acharyas the desire of the Goswamis, and of course the desire of Lord Chaitanya. Does anybody have any comments or questions?
Just as you said that we go to Vrindavan to energize ourselves and fill all the energy back and come back and reach again. But what if when we get old and we won't be able to go to Vrindavan as often as we do now, how do we
reach out ourselves then? Well, one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada created ISKCON was so that the Vrindavan atmosphere would permeate the Krishna conscious movement and the temple Even here, Prabhupada said, this is not Melbourne. This is Vrindavan. Right? So when we worship Radha Ballabha, Kornitai, Lord Jagannath, Balaram Subhadra, here, when we worship Gornitai or the same at home, then that the atmosphere in our houses and the atmosphere in a temple becomes spiritually surcharged, right? So we don't have to go to Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is already here. Huh? You notice it? We used to go out on Sankirtan, and you know, you're having to deal with materialistic people all day. And then you know, the relief that you would feel when you drive in the back gate and just take your wig off. We don't wear wigs these days, but we used to. Then the relief, just the relief of coming. And I've told this story before. We had an interfaith meeting here at the temple, and one of my friends, Anglican priest, said to me, he said, well, first of all, he said, this is the first vegetarian meal I've had in my life. That's pretty good. He said, I get the same feeling here that I got when I would visit temples in Southeast Asia, Angkor Wat, Istanbul. He says, there's a sense of, there's something that I can't put my finger on, but the atmosphere is different, right? So when you come into the temple, you feel, it's different. That's because the activities of the devotees in this area, it's all focused on pleasing Radha and Krishna. So it's as good as the spiritual world. It is, and that's why Prabhupada said, this is not Melbourne, this is Vrindavan. Because all of the activities are focused on just serving Radha and Krishna. So that's why we don't need to go to Vrindavan in our old age. We just go to 197 Dank Street and we're in Vrindavan. Right? And we're with our friends, we're with the devotees, we have kirtan. The feeling is the same, actually. The feeling is the same. Because there's a little bit of extra, you know, in Vrindavan, there's no doubt about that. There is a difference, but still, you know, pretty close. Pretty close. Mahatmaji.
Thank you very much for the very nice lecture. Very practical.
Practical.
I was wondering, this morning my wife told that Prince Philip left the body.
Yes.
So I was just thinking, I was talking in the class also, that a person who has been eating, as you mentioned just now, meat, how could he have such a good, wondrous life? So wonderful. And on the other hand, Christians believe there is no past life. This I can't do. They have to past life.
I don't understand either. it's interesting. I don't know if you there was a picture doing the rounds, Twitter and you know, on social media, of Prince Philip leaving hospital, and he looked frail and frightened. frail and frightened. Right? Now, I can't, you know, external, you know, it's hard. But yes, pious. And
so the peaceful sleep and let go.
Pious.
Pious.
You know, certainly an enduring figure in my life. Now, gone. Yeah. But that teaches us, you know. The material world is a temporary place. And at a certain point, God will not save the king. Because even the king has to die. And that's ordained by God. Each one of us has to leave. And of course, that's the beauty, that's the benefit of having the association of the devotees. Even though death is the most feared of all experiences, in the association of the devotees, we're able to appreciate it's like Prabhupada says, it's like going to sleep and you wake up again and you've got a new body. Right? If you're very fortunate, you can go back home, back to Godhead. Or if you're fortunate, you can take birth again and be a member of ISKCON in your next lifetime and preach. So, either way, we benefited.
It is amazing, in the last line of this verse,
yeah.
Uttubhika Todhyati Vajjanaya, 5,000 years back, where we are to write such nice stories, which we see to him all the time.
Yeah, he could see.
Amazing.
Ranyakashipu got angry with Prahlad Maharaj. Parents getting angry with their children is not an unusual thing, I think, in all ages. it's a standard feature of family life, is that children misbehave, right? And those who you naturally have affection for create the most frustration. I said to my brothers, you know, my dad was a good teacher. Why couldn't he handle his three sons properly? He allowed him a classroom of 30 kids, but he couldn't handle three sons. It's too close. We're too close. But yeah.
Fred McMurray had the same problem. You remember that?
Yes, I'm trying to remember the name
of it. My three sons.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't mind. We look after our children because what is Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, I am your servant, I am your dog, and I'm looking after the house of your family members. Okay, I think we can finish here. Anybody else have any realizations or?
No, quick question.
Quick.
Where's the new crossways?
Where is the new crossways?
Good question.
Where is it? It is two doors away from Gopal's.
Wow.
Yeah. Two doors north.
You want the exact location? Cross and street.
Well, calculate it. It's not very hard to work out.
Okay.
139, 141, 143, 145. 145. Yeah. And it's street level. It's three floors. So.
Yeah.
You know, we were holding out for because we when we left 123, the first floor where Crossways had been for 35, nearly 40 years, we wanted to remain in Swanston Street, and of course pre-COVID there wasn't anything really suitable. And we agreed more or less to go to a place in Block Place, which is just off Block Arcade, down towards Elizabeth Street, off Little Collins. And we were committed, not well, we paid a deposit, we paid a bond, and but then COVID shut everything down. And so we thought, let's just wait, because there's a good chance that there'll be a lot of people going broke, and there'll be empty places that we could, you know, get a good deal on later on. And there's a few of us who want, no, get it now, do it now. But we decided, nah, hold out. Let's hold out. See what Krishna's got in store. And then we were looking at the Starbucks, the old Starbucks and the old Priceline in the Tivoli building in Bourke Street, which was a good location, but really the owner of that premise only wanted somebody there for a year or so. So they were offering it very cheaply, but not revealing that they actually were selling the property and they just wanted somebody to. So when we pushed, we discovered that that was not, you know, that the lease was not favourable for us. Because according to leases, you can sign a lease, but then you can give somebody 6 months' notice if you want to renovate. And so it doesn't matter how long the lease is for. If you want to renovate, you can just give them 6 months' notice and poof, they're gone. So we wanted somebody who was going to give us a long-term lease. So anyway, this particular premises that we're now finalising the lease on, the landlord wanted a tenant that's going to stay there for 15 years. So we've that's what we're negotiating with them at the moment. Or we've agreed. They're a family, well-established family within Melbourne, and they want a long-term tenant that's going to, you know, pay the rent.
Yeah,
pay the rent so that, you know, they make their money. That's their business, is property. And they don't want to sell the property, they want to earn an income. And we want a place, that place, you know, that basically we need footfall. You know what I mean by footfall?
Yeah.
Foot traffic.
Traffic.
Yeah. And that particular location, that stretch of Swanson Street between Little Collins, or between Collins and Bourke, is probably one of the most heavily trafficked footpaths in the city.
Yeah.
So right, we slap, and we've got two floors for prasadam distribution. It's also got a third floor, so we can, and it's big enough to have an urban yoga facility. And that was the other thing that we wanted to hold out for, was to have two floors for prasadam and one floor so that we could do, you know, we can store books, we can have our kirtan instruments, and we can also do programs in the evening, yoga workshops, all of that. So, you know, that was perfect spot. And of course, when we had to leave 123 Swanston Street, that was such a painful experience for various reasons. But and you know, we're scratching our head. Oh gosh, you know, Krishna, what are we? Where are we going? What's going to happen? We're out on the street. And not many options. But then Krishna arranged for the COVID pandemic, and a third of Melbourne's retail is now empty. So we were able to capitalise on that. And this is a good opportunity actually for us. Okay, congratulations, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavad Gita.